are going to go back to the phones. Before we do, John, we were talking before the program started about forays with the Air Force, things that you've been involved with, things that we've been involved with this 23-page report on Roswell, which was just released by a gentleman by the name of Colonel Richard Weaver, which basically was meant to disembowel the idea that anything strange happened at Roswell. Weaver has been in the pages of our magazine in the past. It was Colonel Weaver who stamped the MJ-12 documents as a hoax or forgery. Even though these were not Air Force documents, and by law and regulation, he cannot legally do that, regardless of whether they're a hoax or not, because they weren't Air Force documents, now he turns around, basically does an end run around the GAO, and of course he didn't do this on his own, this was orders, did an end run around Representative Steve Schiff, and basically says, hey, there's nothing really there. Now, you know this gentleman, don't you?
I've had dealings with him, yes.
I'm going to say something that, well, no, I'm just going to say it. I'm not going to beat around the bush. I can prove that this man is a liar, that he lied in the past in reference to information which ultimately feeds into the UFO field. I can prove it. I have the documented proof that shows that the man told an untruth. Have you experienced anything like this? And do you think it is official Air Force policy to routinely tell untruths? I'm not going to be crass and call them liars, but to tell untruths to the American public?
Well, I think it's part of their function to
lie,
to bend a story considerably, sometimes 180 degrees bend. My dealings with Colonel Weaver relate to a 1968 photograph of Groom Lake, Nevada. I purchased that photograph in 1984 through the U.S. Coast and Geodetic Survey. Not only myself, but there were literally dozens of other people that purchased that photograph. It was reproduced in a number of magazines. It has been reproduced in books worldwide. I discovered a couple of years ago from another friend of mine that photo had been pulled from the for sale list, and you couldn't get it anymore. So I inquired to the good colonel and his offices and discovered that, yes, it was placed on the for government use only. And I then went through the Freedom of Information Act to determine how that was done, what kind of documents they had, what pieces of paper were there, and obviously it was only like 10 years because it had been sold publicly. It's kind of interesting that they discovered Roswell pieces of paper that were 40 years old finally.
Yeah, no, nobody really explained how they did that either.
No, and they probably won't. However, let me finish the story. This particular photograph, no one seems to have the documentation, the regulation, or how it was done. It seems to me that there may be a case of whimsy on someone's part, such as Air Force whimsy, under security to say, we're just going to take that photograph and pull it off the for sale, you know, to the public list. It's like the horse is out of the barn. The photograph was published. They did sell it. And yet now they're saying you can't have this anymore. It doesn't make any sense. They can't find the documentation, how they did that, or the regulation. Something is terribly amiss. Of course, I do realize that particular photograph shows a plume of smoke rising from the area of the so-called burn pits where they were dumping things and burning them out there at Groom.
And if I'm not mistaken, there are some gentlemen right now that have filed suit for damages for being overcome by toxic fumes, and I suppose they've come up with cancers or something that...
Well, one gentleman did die. He did pass away, and his wife is involved with that suit. And yes, there are others, and they had worked on buildings adjacent to the burn pits where toxic materials were being burned. It just seems to be a very nice thing for Air Force to remove a photograph that obviously is not a secret. Groom Lake is not a secret anymore. The Soviets fly their satellites over it all the time and photograph it.
And if you have $2,000, roughly, you can get Soviet satellite imagery of this area.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They'll be very, very happy to sell it to you, too.
But if it's policy to keep something secret, I don't think we can actually... It's kind of pointless to talk about whether or not something is a secret. I mean, if the government wants... If it's policy to keep something secret, they're going to lie to keep it a secret. The only thing we can really discuss is, philosophically, should something be a secret? If they believe that this affects the security of the United States, then... By definition of who they are in this government, they are going to do everything that they can to obfuscate it, and we must understand that that is what they're going to do.
The problem is that no one will accept responsibility for this area. Nobody can find out who is in control of this
secret.
Area. I know that, but there
why
is
you?
No accountability. They are not answerable to anyone. U.S. representatives and senators
you
can
don't
make one.
Know who is answerable. Somebody is answerable, but you don't know.
By God, I am the government.
Well,
I'm a citizen of this country. I want to know.
Of course you are, but that's a stretch.
But that's how our nation was set up. And somehow, over the years...
There is a morality to some secrets.
But the National Security Act was
instituted... You would lie to protect your wife.
...just 3 weeks
you
after
You would lie
the
to protect your wife.
Lie about what?
Well, you'd where she was. If you knew somebody was trying to kill her, you would lie.
Of course.
Exactly. Well, that's precisely what these people are saying right now.
I never went anywhere. No. I completely deny having been anywhere.
But my point is, it's foolish for us to, not foolish, but I mean, it's in a sense dead air for us to talk about, it's obvious they want to keep it secret. It's clear. The question is, philosophically, why should they keep this secret? Why should the Roswell incident still be secret?
Because that would then literally open up Pandora's box to a half century of God knows what.
Exactly.
Let's go back to the phones. And incidentally, for you people that have been trying, I have two open lines right now. Two open lines that you can get in. And we're going to go to Mike in Whittier, who is joining us on Simmons. Go ahead, Mike. Good evening. What's on your mind?
Hi. How you doing? This is my first time listening to the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I've known about it for a while, so I'd like to say it's a good show.
Thank you.
I had a question about Area 51. Now, I remember reading somewhere in Popular Science that in 1995 they're going to confiscate more land around the area.
Yes.
Did you have any idea how much land that was? Or
John?
Just under 4,000 acres.
So I don't really know how the land is.
Well, this would effectively close off several areas, Mike.
It's a mountainous area.
Right, yeah. where people can still legally backpack in or walk in and observe the secret base from several miles out.
Isn't it like four mountain peaks or something like that?
There's approximately two. One is a mountain peak. It's called Whiteside. The other areas are kind of hilly, a little raises, but you can walk easily. Whitesides is a tough climb to the top. I've been there at night, been up on the top, and it was kind of interesting. I didn't see a lot, but I did see a very well-lit base and a facility that is a major, major facility. They are taking that particular 4,000 acres. It's just under 4,000. From that area that you can now access. The interesting thing about it is that Whitesides is 13 miles away from the facility itself. And at the time, at the height of the Cold War, U-2 days, 1955, 56, 57, 58, when they were training U-2 people and the CIA was operating the base, you could actually get within 9 miles of the base. Some people said there were spots where you could get within 7 miles. You could watch U-2s in training flights all day long. It is extremely important for our citizens to know that in many cases, such as the U-2 program, people in England, people in Japan, and people in Germany knew the airplanes were coming and going all the time, but we didn't, even though we were paying for it. So it's very, very important for the public to realize that these things are not secret. The Russians knew the very first flight when a U-2 penetrated their territory. They were aware of it. So it's not really secret.
Well, you know, when I first deployed overseas to Okinawa back in 69 and 70, they were routinely flying SR-71 operations out of Kadena Air Force Base. I had never heard of the SR-71. And I can remember one time driving down, and I forget anymore what it was. I think it was like, it was called Highway 1, which ran parallel alongside Kadena. And suddenly, everything was blocked off. Everything stopped. And here came this thing, literally like a bat out of hell, streaking down the runway. And it suddenly tilted up, and I mean, it was gone. It was gone. And it was flying a mission along the coast of North Vietnam and China. And I was amazed. And at that time, 69, 70, it would have been already in operation, what, 6 years?
Yes.
6 years. Probably every communist in Okinawa knew about it, but not the, you know, not the people back here. You're right. You're absolutely correct.
Well, John, what wouldn't you say that the announcement that the SR-71 was mothballed, an acknowledgement that there was a successor?
I'm inclined to think that, yeah.
All right, Mike, I want to thank you for your call. Keep listening, please. We are going to go to Video Dave in Yucaipa. Good evening, Dave.
Good evening, gentlemen. How are you? Dwight, welcome back. And John Andrews, it's been a long, long time. Member number 5 of the UFO Audio Video Clearing.
You betcha, Dave. How are you?
Well, I tell you, we remember when you were working on the stealth model, and what did I get today? My UFO model kit, and the people that designed that box, boy, a salute to them. Who did the artwork on that?
Well, that was done by some of the people right up here in Hollywood working on Bob's film, his movie that's coming along.
Absolutely. Very well done, and I want to congratulate the UN Testers Corporation for probably one of the most unique products to come along. I've been on hold here for about, 40 minutes, so I want to cover a few things.
Do you want me to cut you off then?
It's up to you. I mean, you guys were arguing. I might as well argue with you. The Crusaders had a very nice thing tonight on the Mongol balloon, and they were denied access to the Pentagon. Did you see that tonight?
No.
Yeah, that was on the Crusaders tonight.
Is that right?
Yeah,
they did something on the Project Mogul balloon.
Yeah, they went to the Pentagon to read the additional 30 pages, and the Pentagon kicked them out. So I thought that was really interesting.
Well, I'm gonna tell a secret here that Vicki was gonna hold off until next week, but you know we've talked to people at Vicki spoke this past week to people at Schiff's office, and I don't know if you're aware of it, but right now with his 23-page Air Force report on Roswell, there are in excess of well over 2,000 documents that are available for any researcher to read at the Pentagon Library. There's just one problem, however. You know what that is, Dave?
I don't know. You need an armed guard to read it or what?
No. Anytime people from Schiff's office went to the Pentagon to look at this material, there was no one there that would take them back to read it.
Well, that was interesting because on the Crusaders tonight, they just wouldn't let them in. They went right there to... Because last week they did that whole thing on the cover-up.
Vicki had something to say.
I was just going to clarify. It was Louis Vega, who is the spokesperson at Schiff's office in D.C., mentioned that there were some people. He didn't say it was necessarily from Schiff's office, but there were people, apparently, that went to the Pentagon, and every time they wanted to go into the viewing room and read these, there just didn't happen to be someone there to accompany them, so therefore they couldn't go in. Interestingly enough, a bad coincidence. But I don't know if it was from Schiff's office or not. I just wanted to clarify that.
Well, I was confused about two things on the show tonight. Do you have, Don, a way to put two people on the line at the same time down there?
Sure.
Well, when Lee Graham called a little while ago,
yeah,
I was a little confused as to what he said. Now, tell me if I'm just correct in understanding this. He does not believe Bob Lazar's story, but he does believe that the Area S4 exists.
That's right. That's basically it, yeah.
Yeah, well, if Lee's listening right now and he'd like to call in and get us both on the line at the same time, it'd be rather unique because I have something I'd like to ask him. The other thing also, besides Lazar's model and his experience with the supposedly alien craft, another thing we don't talk about very often over radio or television is the briefing paper that Lazar saw on the autopsies of the aliens.
Right, and let me ask you, Dave, to hold that thought for just a second. I want the phone numbers to go out again.
Sure, no problem.
And then we'll be right back with you.
Sure.
If you'd like to join in tonight's conversation, and you happen to be within the 818-213 or 310 area, music lovers.
And we're back with Video Dave. Dave, you're back on the air.
Yeah, anyway, when we left off, we were talking about these papers. One of the things I don't understand about the UFO phenomena, when we narrow in, like on Lazar, or we narrow in on Roswell, it's part of a gigantic picture. So why are we saying that if we're talking about Lazar and everything that he's done, or if we're talking about Roswell and all the stories about Roswell, these are just very tips of the iceberg. Like Dwight was saying earlier, if the government doesn't want you to know, they don't want you to know. That doesn't mean the phenomena exists.
No, it doesn't mean that the phenomenon exists. That's just it. But you can't prove it. I mean, unless you can measure it, unless you have it, you can't prove it. But that doesn't mean, and a physicist will tell you, I had a wonderful conversation with a physicist. They love things that can't be measured because they don't have to deal with it.
This is Dwight talking right now?
Yes, this is Dwight talking. In other words, unless you can quantify it for a scientist, I mean, this is why Carl Sagan keeps saying, where's the proof? Because he doesn't have to deal with it. He can say that and then go on to some other subject, which doesn't mean, I mean, it's like, you know, Area 51 doesn't exist.
Well,
but we know it does.
When John Andrews joined the UFO Clearinghouse, he was number five.
Right.
We've got 38,000 members now in 175 countries and over 20,000 clips from home camcorders and movie footage.
And some of them are fake.
We're not talking about some of them are fake.
But that's what causes the problem, you see. It's like the Uri Geller disease.
Wait, stop, Dwight. Stop. So of course some of them are fake. There's been fakes throughout history. We're not talking about the ones that are fakes. We're talking about the ones that are crystal clear, daylight, dish-shaped objects going from zero
Mogul
to 300,000 miles an hour instantaneously.
Listen, I understand what you're saying. I mean, you're preaching to the choir with me. But what I'm saying is that the moment you have one that is faked, that is the evidence that is pointed to by everyone in authority to say it's fake. Look at that. Look at this one. And you don't. And then discussion's over.
Exactly the point that I want to make. Why do the so-called powers that be look at the evidence that can be pushed away as an untruth or a phony picture or a phony videotape, whatever? Why don't they look at the stuff that's very positive? Why? Because
it's up to you to prove it, not them.
See, that's the problem, and it's something that you will hear, and Dave, I know you have many times. Extraordinary claims require extraordinary proof or evidence. At any rate, we've got to move along.
Well, wait a minute. My question to you is, where does the extraordinary proof start and stop?
As soon as somebody can walk up with an irrefutable chunk of saucer,
and we know
body,
if we know that if you do, you're going to be arrested because there's the extraterrestrial exposure law. So it's a circle. It's a catch-22. If you were to come out and say I've got it, you'd be in jail.
Well, I've never seen an atomic submarine. I've seen them on film. Does that mean that atomic submarines don't exist?
But I've seen them. A lot of people have.
But we're talking about many people that haven't been in the Navy, et cetera, et cetera.
But a lot of people have seen atomic submarines. There aren't many people other than Bob Lazar.
And you can go someplace where you know nuclear submarines are based, and you can see them entering and leaving.
And we can measure
them.
How
come we can't go to a place we think UFOs are based?
Oh, you can, but then you're going to end up shot. Dave, I got to move. Hey, have a good one, my friend.
Okay,
keep looking up.
Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
All right, we're going to go to Sean in Chicago. Good evening, Sean, and thank you for hanging on. What's on your mind?
Sure. Well, first for John, I was wondering if you guys are planning on doing a Roswell crash model.
we're just going to, for the moment, we're going to see how the Bob Lazar model goes. I just want to toss in something from this last conversation with Dave. So just hang in there, Sean. If we have had a wave of phony UFO sightings and photography, now that our model is out, I expect to see another wave of it. We're gonna get UFO sightings from all over the place with this one, because we've just made it easy for people to do it. Continue with your questions, Sean, please.
Oh, okay. And the other thing was, I was wondering if you've seen the interview with Ben Rich in the new Popular Science.
Oh, yes.
And in there he says that we have certain things that are 20 or 30 years old that are still breakthroughs and appropriate to keep quiet about.
I believe Ben is absolutely right.
And in the next sentence, obviously the guy that interviewed him didn't read a couple issues ago about Popular Science. He says...
Or UFO Magazine, John.
Right. He says, they asked him about the donut on the rope contrails, and he says he can candidly say he's not aware of it, and this would use cryonic fuel as a coolant. And he hasn't seen any facilities in the aircraft area that can store them. And in the back issue of Popular Science, they had the map of Area 51 that labeled the cryogenic storage facilities.
That's down on the south end of the facility. It may or may not be. My personal opinion is that it probably is. It looks like storage tanks that are buried in the ground. That particular photograph, of course, was from a Soviet satellite, and we spent a lot of time with it.
I just think it'd be kind of neat if someone would have, you know, showed him that and then said.
Well, I understand about Ben. Ben still has his clearances. Ben still is a consultant to Lockheed and perhaps other people. Ben will only state what he can legally. And if I were in his particular boots, I would do precisely the same thing. I happen to admire this man. I think the world of Ben Rich.
John, you said something which intrigues me as a layperson. You said that there probably are things that are 20 to 30 years old that still should be kept secret. Can you give me an idea of what you're talking about? What, in general, what that was discovered 30 years ago should still be kept secret?
Okay. One of the things in the security business, of course, is very similar to the U-2 and the SR-71, and maybe it may be applying to other reconnaissance type machines. And that is the fact that sometimes they fly from countries that are our friends. Like our nation, you have a diverse group of people. Some are pro-military, some are anti-military, some are pro the particular party that's in power, some are against it. And we don't go around yelling and screaming that we have this or we have that. As a nation, we do not do that, because it would embarrass the people who actually allow us to fly these machines from their land. So as a result, we keep it secure and quiet, and we play a political game. It is not a technical game.
Yeah, that's the distinction I wanted to make. It's a political secret, not a technical secret.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
All right. Sean, does that pretty much take care of your questions?
Yeah, that's about it. And also, I just wanted to point out that the D-21 that they mentioned in that same issue, I guess, you know, if they're still using drones like that, that could be most of the sightings people are seeing out there, you know, doing some of these maneuvers that people can't explain.
Drone aircraft. Well, that right now, as far as I can say, yeah, that's as good an answer as any. All right, I want to thank you.
Okay.
And we'll be talking again. Keep looking up. All right, we are just about out of time on the half hour. We've got to take that station ID break. And when we come back, let me see here. James, are you there?
Hello?
Yes, okay. You were on a little bit ago and then hung up?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, well, hang on, because we're going to get you when we come back. My name is Don Ecker, the show UFOs Tonight. You're listening to the Cable Radio Network. Joining me tonight in studio, Mr. Dwight Schultz. My in-studio guest, Mr. John Andrews of Tester Corporation. Tonight's subject, black aircraft. As soon as we come back, more of UFOs Tonight. And if you'd like to join tonight's show, this is what you do. And we are back again. All right, we're going to go back to the phones. We got James in Hollywood on Century. Good evening, James.
Hi, how you doing?
Okay, what's on your mind?
I have a question for Mr. Andrews.
Sure.
Mr. Andrews, how long you say you were into UFOs?
Oh, Lord, since the first sightings in Washington State, that which goes back, what, 1947, roughly, yeah.
I find that interesting. Does Mr. James Goodall still work for you?
Mr. James Goodall never worked for me. Jim and I have worked together in searching things out, looking for things. We share common interests in aircraft and what goes bump in the night, but Jim has never worked for the Tester Corporation or for me.
Oh, you never got any information from Mr. Goodall or, say, Mr. John Pike or anybody like that, like Glenn Campbell?
Never from John Pike. Glenn Campbell, I know. From Jim, I've gotten information, yes, but I get information from 100 people.
Well, I find it really interesting. To me, you know, I build your models, too. I've been doing it ever since a kid, but all of a sudden now, it seems like the Tester Corporation is getting into this UFO hysteria to ride on the bandwagon. I mean, how do you respond to that?
Hysteria? What do you mean by hysteria?
You have to describe your terms.
Well, I guess phenomenon would be the better word to use.
But you used hysteria, and it's kind of interesting that you use that word. It's the phenomenon and hysteria are not interchangeable words.
Well, okay. Maybe I used the wrong word. But don't you think that... Well, it sounded like you were trying to do a market study on it, see how well it would help testers out.
Well, isn't that what a commercial enterprise does? I mean, we felt that the time was right. There are enough TV shows. When the Gallup people poll the public, we discover that about 67% of the population believes there's something going on in the field of UFOs, and we just felt that with what Bob Lazar had talked about and said, that the time was right to do a plastic scale model kit. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. And I can assure you it's not hysteria. If anything, if you have the kit and you have the instruction sheet, or if you have one available to you, Jim, I think you'll find that it is probably one of the most stable, level, and high approaches taken to the UFO subject. We don't even say that we absolutely believe in this, because we don't necessarily. There are a lot of things yet to be learned. Our minds are open, not closed.
One more question. The picture of Groom Lake allegedly taken from a Soviet satellite featured in your latest model of, I believe, the Aurora. Wasn't that from the USGS instead of the Soviets?
No. We had, in one case, we published the 1968 photograph, and either that was on the XR-7 or the SR-75. On one of the airplanes, we used the 1968 photograph that I had purchased from the USGS. On the other kit, we used the Soviet satellite photograph.
All right, Jim, thank you for your call. Please keep looking up and keep listening. We're going to go to Ben in Fullerton, who's joining us on Comcast.
Yeah, hello.
Fine. What's on your mind?
I was just wondering what methods are available to non-military or non-governmental people as far as observing and collecting information on this phenomena.
Well, let me tell you very quickly. UFO Magazine is one place. A pair of binoculars sitting out in your backyard in the middle of the night looking at the sky is another.
I'm talking about high-tech, though. Where
high-tech?
Actual information.
Your public library.
I mean, as far as individuals or corporations with money could do, like, I mean, and how far would the government let you go, like, trying to take heat sensor readings on different things?
Freedom of Information Act request. Filing a FOIA with various federal agencies, be it the Air Force, the CIA, the NSA, the NRO, and so forth.
All right, and one more thing. I've read some information on this. Gravity waves are measured with... long high bars of high tolerance as far as measurement goes, and gravity waves, because they distort space-time, the length of the bars will be distorted, and by measuring the distortion of the bars, you can measure the size of the alleged gravity wave. But it's possible the phenomenon is due to other sources other than gravity.
But gravity waves officially have never been verified.
I know, I'm saying that, it could be due to something else, but measurements have been taken which would appear to substantiate claims of gravity waves.
Okay. I want to thank you for your call, Ben. And before we take any more calls, John, let me ask you something. You had mentioned something a while ago, and I didn't follow up on it at the time. But you mentioned an organization, and you didn't really explain who they were at the beginning of the show. You mentioned the NRO. Now, I personally have mentioned the NRO in this program a number of times in the past, but it's one of those alphabet soup organizations that probably 85% of the people don't have a clue who they are. Would you go into that for just a moment?
Well, the National Reconnaissance Office, up until about approximately 2 years ago, was very, very black. I mean, it was something that you didn't talk about. At the same time, everybody near Washington and people surrounding and people who took an interest in reconnaissance was aware of. The NRO is the prime repository for reconnaissance, photography, and information. They have now gone into a not black state but a gray state. They're building a brand new building, and suddenly the senators have discovered what it was costing, and they just had a big hearing about it. They were all surprised. I'm surprised that they say that they're surprised, because give me a break on some things that senators say on occasion. There are people within Congress whose function it is to provide oversight. They are supposed to do that for us, the taxpayer. I am always in awe when these senators come on C-SPAN and look like they're stunned, and they get this chessy cat look on their face, and I just don't buy it. And I don't think any responsible citizen should think that they have been snowed and smoked. It simply is not the truth.
Let me ask you this. If UFOs do, at least some of them, represent an extraterrestrial origin. And the NRO are the people that are involved with satellite reconnaissance, satellite technology. Do you think that the NRO would be the, your opinion now, of course, the repository or the genesis for all the investigation and whatever activities go on concerning UFOs might reside within the NRO?
No, I don't think so, Don. I think if we could really get inside this hardened stainless steel ball and we had the proper tools to do it, I think you're going to find there's a whole separate organization. All of these people are collectors of material. It's passed on to somebody else. I don't know who that is, but I would imagine, due to the nature and the high degree of classification and the serious way that they handle and they spend the time to tell us that there is nothing to this thing, I suspect that it's going to be somewhere highly, highly placed, and it's not going to be an organization that you would instantly recognize.
Do you think then that there may be a separate entity that was put together expressly for this?
Absolutely.
Okay, let me ask you one more question, because we've got to take another very quick little break here. But do you believe that if this phenomena is real and extraterrestrial, do you give credence personally that our government, in fact, has collected a number of these craft, and your personal opinion now, they have attempted to back engineer this, and if you suppose that, is it conceivable that they may have attempted to incorporate some of this technology in our present-day aircraft?
It's my belief that over the years there have been a sufficient number of sightings and a sufficient number of cases of where people have said they have seen something glowing coming apart. Cash Landrum, of course, we have that. People have suffered some very bad physical things. I suspect that some material has been collected. In terms of the back engineering, if Bob Lazar says that he thought these, whatever this is probably 300 years into the future, into our future, the capability of doing that. He also said the materials were not available on this earth. Yes, we're probably doing back engineering, but we may not have the equipment to really produce something from it. But we're learning. It takes time, and it will take a lot of time.
Okay, we're going to take a quick little break. My name is Don Ecker, the show UFOs Tonight. Tonight, my in-studio guest, John Andrews of Tester Corporation, and we're talking about the wonderful world of black aircraft. And when we come back, more right here on UFOs Tonight. And if you'd like to join tonight's conversation, this is what you do.
If you're within the 818, 213, or 310 area codes...
Okay, and we are back. Let's go back to the phones. We've got Jim in Milwaukee, who's joining us on satellite. Jim.
Yeah, hi, Don.
What made Milwaukee famous, my friend?
Gotta be the beer.
Okay.
All right. Got a question for your guest, John.
Yes, Jim.
That is, why hasn't anyone ever made a model of the V-173 flying flapjack that was flown in between 1942 and 1947. It's an aircraft and also a disc shape. It would have been a very interesting model.
Well, I can tell you why. There's a number of people that have asked us for that kit because it's very unusual. The problem is that plastic model kits, the tooling cost is extremely high, and we never felt that it was really all that well known by a sufficient number of people who could return our tooling cost investment. So we did not go into it at all. And of course, no one else has either.
And it's a money thing, huh?
Well, everything's a money thing.
Okay.
Everything's a money thing, Jim. I mean, when you talk about, you know, yourself and buying a car or a suit or a coat or a hi-fi or a new camera, what's the first thing that comes to your mind?
Yeah, the money.
You got it.
The cost. You know, there's something else too. You seem to agree with a lot of people that speed is the ultimate in designing an aircraft. I kind of disagree with that. I think that you could really get further faster if you fly between the dimensions rather than going into another dimension, actually fly a craft between the dimensions. Now, 30 years ago, a man came up to me, a stranger, out of the clear blue sky, asked me, have you ever thought or wondered on why a flying saucer can travel from 0 to 1,000 miles an hour without breaking the sound barrier? And I've thought about that for years, and the only conclusion that I can come to is that the craft has to fly between the dimensions where it's still visible, but actually not here.
What if it displaces the air, thereby nullifying the sonic boom?
I'd have to do a really good job on it, because some of these craft have some goofy designs on them. They're not aerodynamically built.
Jim, one of the really curious thing when you get into the physics of these things is, and Bob Lazar has pointed it out, and I've discussed it with him at some length, is the fact that a UFO probably under full power could pass right overhead and you wouldn't see it due to the fact that it has the capability of bending the light around it. And it gets to be a very interesting thing. That capability may also exist relative to the atmosphere. And as a result, there is no buildup and the production of a shockwave.
Okay.
Okay, but I kind of disagree with that, because some of these craft are cigar-shaped, and they go by very fast and very silent with a hole in the front end that has to catch air, something fierce.
Well, you know, cigar-shaped, it's cigar-shaped from the side, but if it bent over, if it did a 180, it might be circular. I mean, I've seen airplanes taking off from Burbank. In fact, I've spent several hours watching airplanes in the sun, like, taking off. And sometimes you'd swear you're looking at a disc. Sometimes it looks like you're looking at a cigar. And then when they go to bank, you see the wings. Things change. And if you bend light around something, you wouldn't know what you're looking at. If Bob Lazar is telling the truth, if you start to bend light, you can perform almost any feat of magic.
Okay, Jim, we have got to keep moving, my friend.
Okay.
I want to thank you for your call. And we are going to go to Alan in Whittier, who's calling us on Salmons. Alan, good evening.
Good evening. I have a question for John.
Yes.
A couple of them. One, if you bend the light, you become practically invisible. Isn't that the assumption? If you bend the light, you're practically
invisible.
Well,
what happens is that you begin to see the light behind the vehicle, and therefore the vehicle, you don't see the vehicle, but you see the background behind it. So therefore, in essence, the vehicle is invisible.
That's correct. So therefore the noise and everything would be take a backseat to everything else, because if it's not, if you can't see it, therefore you can actually displace the sound as well too.
Well, we can do that today, practically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But here's a question: an aircraft that's capable of doing Mach 15, what type of a usage would it have in today's era? Since an aircraft that can do Mach 15 could have only a short distance to do at Mach 15 because of the fuel consumption, at least to what we know, what the fuel consumption of the engines are. And what type of a usage would it have in atmosphere at Mach 15? And what type of a person can actually fly this type of aircraft?
Well, they would be able to refuel in air, wouldn't they, in flight, wouldn't they, John?
They would be able to do that, but of course they'd have to slow down to do that because your tankers aren't running at Mach 15 either. One of the interesting things is the fact that there may be great increases in efficiency and fuel consumption. For example, you know, when Lockheed did the D-21 drone, it was powered by a ramjet engine, and people said, well, the ramjets consumed a great deal of fuel. The D-21 was not a really huge airplane. At the same time, that engine ran for hours at trisonic speeds. It was a very, very fuel-efficient machine. And now that's 1959 technology. I don't know where we're at precisely today, but I would imagine we've made a few steps forward.
That's correct. What I'm looking at, a Mach 15 wouldn't have any usage basically in today's warfare. Basically, most aircraft, and they want to go to a dogfight, that's still down.
Oh, I don't think it'd be used for a dogfighter. It would be used for reconnaissance to get over some potential enemy's territory, take the photographs, bring the stuff on back. It's just kind of like what they called a stealth fighter, the F-117. If it had to become a fighter, it had failed in its mission. The F-117 was actually a bomber. Because no one saw it coming, the fighters weren't up there, and it just continued, did the mission, and came back home.
Here's the last question. What about the person flying it? A human body can take only about 6.5 G before it starts passing up and require a special suit to pump the blood back up to its heart and to the brain. At Mach 15, it seems pretty unreasonable type of a suit that required to maintain those type of G-force on the body.
Well, I think what we're talking about there is the fact that this airplane is not twisting and turning as it might be in dogfighting. There was one time when people were coming up with automobiles and they said the human body could not go faster than 30 miles an hour. I mean, these were scientific people saying that. Well, we know better because we do know that things can go with a human body in it at 26,000 miles an hour as we launched various satellites and shuttles and all kinds of things. So it all depends what you're doing. In terms of the UFO, perhaps the body is contained within a field inside of the craft itself.
That's what the point I was trying to get to.
Sure.
Aurora wouldn't be an airplane, more of a spacecraft than anything.
Well, it is
else.
It's a modified space plane, right at 140,000 feet.
Oh, sure. Very, very close.
That's the point I was trying to get to.
All right, Alan, we've got
to
move along, my friend.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Let's see. Let's go to Robert in Lakewood, who's joining us on Jones. Robert.
Hello.
Yes, good evening.
Hi. I, in fact, recently wrote Mr. Andrews. I don't know if he got my letter, but this is Robert Boyce.
Yes, Robert. Good letter, my friend. Thank you.
I'm currently working on a spec script entitled Area 51. Funny choice of names. And it's for a gentleman that's currently working on Earth 2, the science fiction show that's going to be coming out. My question is, it's been real tough researching this type of a thing. There's basically no information around. You have to depend on the very little information that's out there and take it with a grain of salt, like the Lazar story and such.
Are you telling me you haven't been reading UFO magazine, Robert?
I just got the latest issue.
How long have you been? Oh, you don't have a subscription?
No.
Oh, my God. No, let me ask you this. How long have you been listening to my show?
Believe it or not, my family and I just got home this evening from the zoo in San Diego. I was flipping channels to see what was on.
Oh, you're the first time.
And you have the
nerve to say I can't get this information.
Don't yell at him. He sent me a very, very nice letter, a very good letter.
One of the questions that I had for both of you, or either of you, is, as I mentioned to Mr. Andrews, I think I work for one of the government agencies, and I run into a lot of retirees. One specific a retiree who I mentioned his name. I don't mind mentioning it now. He's Lieutenant Colonel Emerson. Used to be out in the Nellis area. And he knows a lot about the Nellis area. And he's given me some information. And recently, with his information, it just banged right on. I picked up a magazine and was reading about the cipher. And it kind of all kind of blended together. Do you have the same understanding I do, or am I totally in left field, that this new cipher has been used to watch the Watchers out on Whiteside? I understand the Sikorsky cipher hovers at 10,000 feet, can take pictures of a gnat on a license plate. And what he's telling me is that the cipher has been tested by Sikorsky out of 51, and that possibly the Watchers are being watched by it. Have you heard that, or do you know anything about the cipher? Or?
Well, yeah, the cipher is a round craft, a remote reconnaissance vehicle that Sikorsky is working on.
I didn't want to include it if you thought that it was bogus information. Because I want to have as much as I can to show what the Watchers are going through, what the people are going through.
Is this for a script?
Yeah, I'm doing a spec script for.
Oh, so we're basically let me ask you, Robert. We're conducting business on my radio program 6 minutes before the show is over for a script that you're writing that I'm not even going to get to advertise.
Oh no, I'm going to hopefully be working very closely with Mr. Andrews if he agrees.
Okay, well I'll tell you what, and believe me, I'm not being a smart guy. No. I almost said something else. I got to move along. But why don't you call him up at work on Monday, and I'm sure you guys can get this all hammered out. Okay. And then I'll be more prone to talk to you next week after you get a subscription.
keep
looking up, Robert.
Okay.
Bye-bye. All right, we're going to go to Dallas. We're going to get Kevin, who's joining us from Dallas, Texas. Good evening.
How you doing?
Just fine. What's on your mind?
Well, 2 points. First of all, as far as the government keeping things secret, if there is something going on, the one thing that a government would fear more than anything else would be to be seen in the eyes of its citizens as being impotent. And if this is some...
excellent point, Kevin.
...civilization that's coming here that they can't stop, the last thing that they'd want to do would be to be perceived as being impotent and not being able to have any influence on whether or not these creatures come and go.
Precisely.
The second thing is, I just have a real problem with these guys coming here and leaving spaceships lying around to where, you know, where government picks them up and takes them off to these military bases and takes them apart, and using, you know, typical government logic, they don't really build anything. I haven't seen anything that really shows any dramatic technology. I mean, the X-15 flew at, what, 5 times the speed of sound years ago? The Germans had a design for the Sanger space plane that would fly back in 1945, you know, through in space and supposedly drop bombs in the United States. I mean, this is all old stuff. I want to see something really new. Some evidence that would really show me that...
Kevin, I want to see the space chicks. That's what I want to see. John, how do you answer that?
Good questions, Kevin. I really think that there's probably a great deal of back engineering going on. I really think it's a money situation. I think there's going to be some ideas, power plants, fuels, all kinds of means of levitating something that's heavy, doing it with a minimum of power, a minimum of waste, and
well,
it's going to have a lot of money value to it.
Well, I fly airplanes for a living, and I've been doing this for 20 years now, and I have seen no real jump in the technology. Everything has led into everything else. There's been no.
Well, Kevin, hold on just a second. Now, let me ask John something here, John, because this brings something to mind. Something Kevin just said kicked in. Years ago, Dr. Hermann Oberth, back in the 50s, famous German, it was like the godfather of their rocket program, kind of like Goddard is with us, said that the United States government was exploring magnetic, electromagnetic drives.
Townsend Brown.
And exactly, and that probably by the end of the 50s, the beginning of the 60s, we would have technology that would take us to the moon. And Bill Lear, John Lear's father, the overall honcho of Lear Corporation, the guy that did the Lear jet and who knows what all else, talked about matter transference from one end of the country to the other in a space of merely seconds. Walk into a phone booth, drop your credit card in, and you walk out, walk in New York, walk out in San Francisco.
Geez, I'd be out of a job.
Exactly, exactly, exactly. Now, how do you explain things like this? I mean, we're talking about some of the brightest minds of the 20th century in the last 30, 40 years. And they've talked about this, and then nothing. We hear nothing about it.
Well, I really think what they were talking about is possibilities. They were projecting dreams.
No, Oberth was very specific. Hmm. Oberth said that we were getting information from visitors. He was specific about that.
Yes, but then again, Don, we have to admit that there are these visitors, that they're here, and we're getting this information. And then we have this prime problem of how does this government react to the fact that they're here from light years away? They're doing things that we can't possibly do. And then suddenly these governments say to themselves, we can't defend against this.
Okay, now look, we have 1 minute left. Kevin, I have one more call. I want to try to get to this call before the show is over, but I
okay.
want to thank you for your call.
Thank
Please
you.
Keep listening. Call next week. We're going to get to James in Bloomington. Is that Minnesota?
Yeah, Minnesota.
Yeah, Jim, you've got about a minute.
All right. Yeah, I'm calling about a UFO that I seen back in 1975.
Okay, can you hold off and call me back next week?
Yeah, I can.
And then we can discuss it at length.
All right.
Thank you, Jim. Okay. All right. That is just about it, John, for
well,
the
time.
Show.
Thanks very much. Hope you enjoyed this edition of Don Ecker Live.
Well, that was Larry King, and he's telling us, yeah, we're out of time. I want to thank you for coming in. It's been absolutely fascinating. I really look forward to this, and I'd like to do it again. I'd like to do it before too long.
Sure.
Okay. I hope you've enjoyed it, Dwight. Welcome back. It's great having you back. Great having you back on the show. Next week, we are having Larry Bryant, who will be joining us from Virginia. The organization is called Just Cause. Mm-hmm. Right now, even as we speak, he has a suit against the Secretary of the Army for First Amendment violations that Brian is claiming. Brian has been at the forefront of some of the most important UFO research in years, and he will be joining us a week from tonight. 2 weeks, we're going to be talking once again to Dick Hoagland about Cydonia and lunar stuff. This weekend is where it's happening in Cody, Wyoming. Unfortunately, I couldn't get there.
You said lunar, not loony, right?
Yes, lunar. That's L-U-N-A-R. Okay, that's it for another week, folks. Keep your eyes to the skies. My name is Don Ecker, and the show is UFOs Tonight. Here's the music. Mm-hmm.